Jen Zamperali on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.
Now, it's been all over the news that technology will be a key part of the government's attempts to respond to the riots in the capital. But what are the dangers of rushing laws on things like facial recognition technology, body cameras and laws on hate speech? Elaine Burke, journalist and host of the For Tech's Sake podcast, has seen some of this stuff in action and she joins me now. Elaine, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
Okay, good. Got that out of the way. Now tell me, what do supporters of facial recognition technology say about why it's necessary?
Well, so one of the most common cases that people will use when they're advocating for this technology and its kind of best case application would be the missing child scenario. And I think that's quite an emotive case when you're talking about trying to track down a missing child. And the idea would be that you'd be able to have a suspect that you could then feed into a system. And you could go through footage from CCTV or in some cases, which in some jurisdictions, body worn cameras on police and car mounted cameras on police vehicles and detect the face of the person who's your suspect. Now, the issue there is you have to have a suspect and a face to do the matching. So it's kind of like it's a emotive scenario and a help sell facial recognition technology to industries and maybe to the public sometimes. But in practice, it would be a rare case, but it's also not exactly something that's watertight because of those limitations. You would need to have a suspect and a good image of that suspect that you can then feed into a database. You would need to have access to a lot of footage. And then that brings in concerns about privacy and surveillance. And that kind of real-time deployment of facial recognition technology is something that the majority of privacy advocates, even more moderate privacy advocates, wouldn't be keen on, because you get into that area of people feeling like they're in a surveillance state. And that's something that the EU AI Act, which you may have heard a lot about, that's coming down the line, has so far been ruling against doing.
Wow.
And there was kind of discussion in light of that about France talking about deploying facial recognition technology ahead of the Olympics being hosted there. And that would be basically happening in advance of the AI Act coming into force. So it'd kind of be an example of how this could be done before any enforcement rules it out. But what they've actually done is they've pulled back on the facial recognition side of this kind of computer vision technology. And what they're looking at doing is actually using computer vision technologies and algorithms that can basically detect things in live footage, using it to look at things like if there might be a weapon in footage and there'd be a human operator involved here. Like if a piece of footage is flagged, they would have to identify if it actually is what it thinks it is. And if someone is accessing an area that they shouldn't be, or if there is a left object. So instead of actually looking at facial recognition technology as in this kind of real-time deployment, the people policing the French Olympics are actually moving away to it.
And sidestepping, okay.
Yeah, they seem to be more practical uses of computer vision technology in policing, because a lot of this stuff is actually, like I said, you get that missing child scenario, but that's really an emotive kind of like nearly like a filmic scenario that you get to pick. And people are probably used to seeing, say, your detective shows on TV where people are using computers and enhance and they can do whatever they want to find people. But the reality is much different to that. And where this technology is really useful is in time saving. So I've seen facial recognition technology being demonstrated, and even in a controlled demo, it will flag up faces that don't really, to me as a person, look very much like the face that they're trying to detect. But a human operator would be able to go through, say, a short list and find maybe a better match and a face that actually is more likely to be a good match to the one that they're looking for. So human involvement is key. And what it is actually doing is shortening the time frame it takes to do that. Because if you are trying to go through thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of photographs to try and match with a face that you have maybe in CCTV footage or something like that, to anything that makes that time a bit shorter and assists people in maybe making the shortlist faster that they can go through with their keen human eye is helpful.
Computer vision technology, which you mentioned there, which the French are sidestepping towards, and the facial recognition, at the end of the day, do they both not have the same concerns? It's all surveillance operation.
Yeah, and I think it's a kind of it's a case of the real-time deployment versus post-incident analysis.
Okay.
So post-incident analysis would be if something has happened and then, say, the investigators acquire CCTV footage, and we see that, you know, with, even shows on TV will show you CCTV footage and put a call out to see if anyone recognizes someone. There'd be an appeal for that. So it's using technology that is available to us to speed up that investigative process. There seems to be less objections when it's used in that respect.
Okay.
But when it comes to real-time deployment, there's definitely a lot of objections there, because again, that's the part that feels like you're being surveilled and actively
in case you do something. So. Yeah. Okay. How much use do you think facial recognition would have been last week?
Not very. So this is where the limitations are very, very clear for that post-incident analysis, because a lot of us would have seen footage from what happened in Dublin last week. But the clear footage that has been used by, say, news resources all over the world at this point was taken by people on the ground from their phones. Phones are really, really good at capturing even nighttime video these days, but that's owned by private citizens. So the police don't have immediate access to that. They can request footage from citizens, and I know that they have done, and that some people have handed over footage that they had from the night. But if they were limited to, say, CCTV, that kind of makes it's a lot less clear the footage that you get from CCTV. It's a lot less kind of on the ground being able to move around and get different angles on people's faces and stuff like that. So if they don't have all the footage that we've seen, that's a limitation. It was a dark night. It was low light. There was also kind of the flames from fires and stuff like that would change the lighting and stuff like that. And shadows and things like that can actually for computer vision make it a bit more of a challenge for this facial detection stuff. And their faces were covered in a lot of cases. And obviously you can't do facial detection on a covered face. And then there's the fact that you have to have a database to match. Facial recognition technology doesn't have a database of the world's population existing to feed into it. Now, there are some companies
might
do just as much as that. And, mm-hmm. and they're definitely on the wrong side of a lot of what privacy advocates would want from this. But you'd have to be a known perpetrator that's already in the system for the police to match with if you were to be detected here. Now, what they could try to do is maybe match your face across different types of footage to say, oh, you were spotted here and then you were spotted in this frame and so on, and use that in an investigation. But in terms of detecting people to track them down for prosecution, I couldn't see it being hugely useful in this case.
Okay. There's been a lot of talk about Gardaí having body-worn cameras. What are the advantages of them? And if we are going to go down that road, which I've heard is being called for, do you think it would be a better use of funding to have more cameras, more, CCT cameras around city centres and stuff like that?
I think something that is actually quite shocking, and probably more if this is going to come to light with the appearances before public committees and stuff like that going on. But what I was reading today was that there was huge numbers of Gardaí who didn't have the protective gear that they needed on site in their stations because there's not enough lockers, and they had to go home and fetch that protective gear in order to go out and conduct the public order maneuvers that they had to do. That is just fundamentally bad management. I would say anyone who's worked in any kind of employment where you need protective equipment, that's just not something that you do. You don't leave your protective equipment
at home
off site or anything like that. Like, that's really bizarre to me. And when you think of things like that being fundamentally wrong, and then you're trying to put high tech solutions on top of that, it seems like there's more fundamental issues at play here. And the body cam and facial recognition technology legislation isn't just coming into the headlines now because of what happened last week. It's been debated for the last at least the past year in pretty much intense debate, and it is progressing as it stands. Now,
can you tell me about body cams and how they work?
Yeah, so they are essentially, like, they're attached usually around to the shoulder area of a police officer, and they don't capture footage constantly. They're not kind of always on. And what some systems do is that they can be triggered manually by a police officer, or they can be triggered by a sensory event. Say if it's felt that a police officer was pushed. So like the kind of like gyroscopic sensors that can be inputted into these devices can sense that a police officer was shoved or had fallen down or something like that had happened. Then it might be activated. Mm-hmm. And it, what it might be able to do, again, it depends on what body cams they use and what device maker they're partnering with, they might be able to capture a few seconds beforehand. So they're kind of maybe capturing a few seconds and then overriding that until they're fully activated. So you might get a few seconds before the incident. And some cases as well, you can have it where body cams, if there's multiple officers present, if one body cam is activated, it sends out a Bluetooth signal that activates all other body cams in the area. And that helps to get different angles on a situation, because that particular angle on a person, when you're at that kind of shoulder level, if there is an aggressor or someone who is being accused of being an aggressor, that angle can make certain movements look maybe more aggressive than they were in the larger context. So having multiple views is actually quite important and a really useful addition to this technology. So there's lots of different things that are being done in terms of tweaking these technologies and making them more efficient. And the reason why I say they don't record footage 24/7 is simply like a storage limitation for the most part.
If the guards have the body cameras and we have more CCTV cameras in the city centre and we have all this technology that we know can work, we're not going to just rely on the body cams. If we have all these different things in place, surely an accumulation of all this is evidence. You're not just going to rely on one thing, you know what I mean? So I say the more the better. But can I ask you, when it comes to public disorder, how effective of a deterrent are these cameras being caught on camera? Is it an effective deterrent?
Well, I think it's something you're kind of touching on there, is that there's no kind of silver bullet solution here at all.
No.
It's a multiplicity of factors have to come together to make effective policing happen. And a huge factor of effective policing is trust and transparency. Now, body cams can help in that, because there are some citizens who feel better that they exist, as well as police officers who feel that like it's good to have a document of an event. But citizens too, if they have an interaction with a police officer that they don't feel was handled well, they should be able to solicit that footage and challenge what happened there as well. Now, that all depends on if the body cam footage was being recorded at the time, if it was being used. You may see them on a shoulder, but are they recording? And there's issues there when it comes to social acceptance. And in this case, it's particularly difficult, because if relations between the citizens being policed and the police force are souring, well, that's a bigger issue, and you can't just throw a tech solution on top of that. If people don't trust that the body cams will be turned on when they should be, if they don't trust that they will be able to make claims on that footage and solicit that footage if they make a case, well, then it kind of like there needs to be an understanding that these are being brought into place for everyone to benefit, for police officer safety and for citizen safety. And there's even cases, like there's a sociologist who looked into a lot of this tech and policing, and she was on a ride along with a cop in LA, and he had location tracking technology built into his vehicle, but his union objected to using that, so he was typing in locations manually. And she asked him, and he said, well, I don't want them knowing where I am at all times. So it's like who gets to be surveilled and who doesn't get to be surveilled? Like there's a power imbalance there as well. All these are bigger societal issues that you need to talk about, because policing is a societal thing, and it's also like community based, and you need to have trust and transparency for policing to work and be effective. And that's a huge education piece, and it's a huge engagement piece when it comes to policing as well.
Back to the technology just for a second, Elaine, and the data concerns. What about data concerns and the new legislation on hate speech?
I will say one thing at the top here. There's a lot of conversation about this right now as if hate speech legislation is being rushed through in Ireland. That's really not the case. Ireland is very, very behind when it comes to hate speech, and it's basically at a point where it really needs to act on this. We're so far behind. We're not on par with other countries in the EU. There's like an international human rights element here that requires that we legislate for this. So I wouldn't paint this as something that's being rushed through. It's definitely something we're lacking. And overall, the proposal that's out there, the proposed legislation, has been welcomed by many, many groups as being, you know, a good enough, maybe we should say, solution here. It's not perfect. There's an element that's been focused on a lot where there's basically the possession of material is part of the legislation. So there's an offence being made at the possession of material. There are people who are reading deeply into that and saying, well, that means if you had happened to have any material on your laptop that contained hate speech on it, you could be prosecuted for it. And you could imagine there's probably academics who have that kind of material, just people who are collecting it maybe to for their own citizen detective work or something like that, not intending to spread or disseminate it to incite violence or anything like that. So the storage of that information or that material becomes an offence there. But there are exclusions in this proposed legislation for literary, artistic, political, scientific, religious or academic discourse. And when it's a genuine contribution in any of those cases, it would be ruled out. And it's also, and someone who's been a really good commenter on this is Dr. Seamus Taylor at Maynooth University, a social science researcher. He spent decades working on diversity and hate crime legislation in Ireland and the UK, or looking into this area. And prosecution and the legal system still applies here. So like the DPP would still have to decide to prosecute, and they're not going to prosecute willy-nilly. I don't think that's something that we have a precedent for here in Ireland. Now, people, when they're writing out laws, do have to consider long term and could there be bad actors? And you have to have these debates. You do have to probe the wording of legislation and talk about it. But I don't think any law is ever going to please all parties. And that's, you know, the situation of being in a democracy. You end up with something that somewhat pleases most parties to most extent. And that's what we're looking at here.
I mean, good solutions are really simple ones. So how would you explain, you know, the dangers of getting the balance wrong between public safety and personal freedom?
It's like, it's definitely, it's a fine line to walk, and it's not easy. And like I said, there's hate speech legislation across the world. We're out of step with this, and none of them have gotten it right. It's still debated in most places where it's active. But that's why you have a situation where laws can be amended, and when they're put into practice and when things go wrong, and that does happen. Sometimes the law as it exists to protect people can be used in a way to circumvent that protection because a precedent has been set or something has been overlooked or someone has just found a way to finagle the law to work in their favour. Those things can happen, and they do happen in the legal system globally around the world. But that's why we have the capacity to interrogate that, to move with the times, to amend things. And I do think it is important that Ireland does move with the times on the hate speech legislation. It's something that we are definitely lacking at the moment.
Okay, Elaine Burke, thank you so much for joining me this morning. There we go. That is Elaine Burke, tech journalist and host of the podcast. It's called For Tech's Sake. It's a great podcast. Go and give it a listen.
Jen Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.